Today's Phil Hendry Show brought to you by Bear Stokely Hams. In the can or handy package, Bear Stokely Hams. Lean, light, transparent, or fluid. The Bear Stokely Ham. It'll ham up your day, ham up your night, ham up your guts, and eventually kill you. But it's good. Honey baked. Ham from Bear Stokely. Hi, it's Phil Hendry, and don't forget everybody that you hear on the show today, all the voices that you hear on the show today, are performed by me. Enjoy.
And welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And you can hear that my voice is still a little bit rough here, which means that Phil's is going to be a little bit rough.
Well, actually, you should have cleared your throat because my voice...
Yeah, but Henry's voice sounds pretty good.
Oh, does Mr. Hendry's voice sound pretty good? Well, my voice, you should have cleared me.
Does that mean you should have cleared everybody?
Listen.
What?
What does that mean? He should have cleared you.
Doug,
he
should have.
I just want money.
I should have cleared her voice. Hi, guys. Phil Hendry Show. I thought we were going to come into this show clean, but I guess not. There's still a little bit of residual phlegm. How about you, Robert?
No, I'm all right.
And, General?
I feel fine. I think we're dealing with the situation with Margaret.
Well, as you said yesterday, Phil, as I said, you said through me, my voice is a particularly unique instrument. One that...
Don't start talking like you're the one.
Pardon me, bud, because I don't care what Phil says. I'll end you. As Robin Williams said in Good Will Hunting, I'll end you. You know?
Yeah, and it was kind of dumb the way he said it.
That didn't scare anybody.
You're a lie. It scared hell out of every man that heard it.
What is this,
Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting. Remember that? I'll end you.
What the hell are you talking about? That was the, what, Robin Williams, the guy who was Nanu.
What?
That was the guy that did the Nanu.
No, we're talking about a much later incarnation of Robin Williams, when he was a serious actor in Good Will Hunting.
I never saw it.
Well, in the film, he is insulted by a young man. I believe it has to do with his wife, right?
Yes, he is. I think the young man, played by Matt Damon, says something, insulting about Robin Williams, his character's wife.
Yeah, then he goes, I will end you, you know?
Yes, and did it scare you?
Not really.
It was a very good scene.
Well, it doesn't sound scary to me. What do you mean, scare you? Some guy says that to me. You're going to end me, huh? Watch me end you. And before that guy could turn and move away from me, I would have taken him, lifted him above my head, flung him from whatever high elevation I could find, a mountain, the top of a chair, you know.
You have to explain this, or is this going to end at some point?
All right, I got the idea, General. You would...
I'd end him.
All right. Welcome to our program, Phil Hendry Show. And, you've got a little bit of a rough voice, Margaret. I think everybody else is doing very good. We have a lot of things to cover on the program today. We just got back from F is for Family, where we did a record. This is next to the last week.
Is next week the last show?
Next week's the last show that we do for F is for Family. It's going to be a great season. I encourage all you guys, if you haven't seen it, to catch up by watching last year's shows, and then you'll be all set for the beginning of the coming 2016 season.
So you, and I understand you spent some time talking to Mark Wilmore, one of the writers.
Mark is a terrific guy.
Now, he is a very experienced man. He's written for Jay Leno. He wrote for In Living Color. He wrote for The Simpsons. Of course, this F is for Family. Quite an accomplished writer. What did you discuss?
Well, it's none of your business.
Yeah, Margaret, you know what?
Excuse me, what are you talking about? None of my business.
Yeah, Miss Grace, she's the entertainment writer. She can ask those questions.
It's all right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting busy, buddy.
Why don't you butt out, bud, before someone jams a pencil in your eye?
All right. Hey.
God damn.
Jesus, Margaret.
No, I talked to Mark. He's a great guy, and what I like about him is he's... He knows how to construct not only a show in terms of the writing, but he also has got a good eye as a director. And I was talking to him. We were sitting just, having some lunch, because when you go in there and you do the show, some people go into the booth and they record.
Bringing booth.
It's like a phone booth? What do you mean a booth? Yeah.
It's the recording studio booth, but it's much bigger than a phone booth.
Yes, it's a studio.
It's a studio, yeah.
Oh.
So we were waiting to go into the... No, it's not a phone booth, bud.
No, you say booth.
It's you go into a booth, and it's soundproof, so it is in its own way kind of a booth. But this particular studio we use can accommodate a lot more than just one person. So I'm waiting to go in there, and I said to him, I'm doing stand-up comedy. He said, Oh, you are?
That was shocking to him, huh?
Yeah, did he really, his eyes bug out on that one?
No, his eyes didn't bug out on that one.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people would be surprised.
No, he wasn't. He said, oh, you're doing stand-up. I said, well, I'm trying to. I said, but, you know, I don't write jokes.
Yes, we know that. That's not a put-down, Phil.
Will you mind if I just get through the story?
Go ahead.
Yeah, we didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
You didn't hurt my feelings. What I'm trying to do is give it his story. So he said, well, you know, there are people that say funny things, and there are people that say things funny. And he said, you are more the type that says things funny. He said, so you, you know, should construct your show around that. Don't construct your show around telling jokes.
Now, what does that mean? They say, because I don't know anything about this stuff. This is all, you know, it's like speaking Swahili or some different language, you know.
Yeah, well, this is performance style, General. What Phil was talking about. It's real. It's highly developed. It's advanced work, as they like to say.
Well, I'm talking about what kind of material you do.
Yeah, well, it is. It's about what kind of material you'll do, but how you're going to deliver it. Are you going to deliver it in joke manner? Are you going to be doing characters, which, as you guys know, is what I do? And I'm going to use the cough button now, Bud. It'll make you happy.
Thank you.
You know, that's not a button. That's just a fader.
I know, but I prefer it.
Oh, you know what? Bud sounds a lot. Everybody sounds better since you got the phlegm out of your mouth there.
It was in my throat.
Oh, in your throat, I mean.
Yeah, even I sound good.
Yeah, you all sound great. So anyway, as I was trying to say, it was a nice conversation. All right. As I said, we've got some things to cover on the show today. One of them is, I don't even know if we're going to get into this because I'm not quite sure who's going to. Did we get a guest for this? This is a story having to do with the Capuchin monkeys. They colonized Brazil 700 years ago.
Yeah, see, that surprises me because the Capuchin monkey is a dumb animal, a dumb ape, dumber than hell, and you're trying to tell me that it colonized and it used a stone anvil. I'm insulted by that because a friend of mine had a Capuchin monkey. I didn't like it. It looked at me every day like I was the dumbest thing it ever saw.
Well, you're taking all of that personally.
I'm not taking it. It's a monkey. How can I take it personally?
What are you talking about? The dumbest damn thing you ever saw.
I'm just surprised that the Capuchin monkey, you know. But anyway, we got Dr. Arthur Barn, I believe, right, Phil?
Either Dr. Arthur Barn or Dr. William Brown, they both sound the same. One is a vampire hunter, and the other is into the world of animals, even though he hates the living guts out of animals.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And,
What does that mean, exactly? They both sound the same.
It's a slight anomaly on a character.
Oh, look at the big word.
All right, Margaret, you know, Bud's trying to get along with you today, so if you don't mind, would you try and get along with him?
I get along with all people at all times, Phil. I am no man's enemy. I'm every man's friend.
So I've heard.
You lousy little...
On, will you? Where somebody kills somebody, like me killing somebody. All right, let's go out there and see what the traffic is like. Bob Bacon.
All right, Phil, we got a further right down to let everybody know that we're going to be up there until about 8 o'clock. And the side sign was about 6 o'clock, so they're going to be telling me that up front. Right, Bill?
Oh, yeah, Matt.
All right. And it's going down the Beef Highway. If you go to the side of Beef down there, you're going to have to. But going down Beef Highway, about 5 to leave that train. It'll be dead out. There'll be a long train out there until 3 o'clock. Go to Sky Boy.
And Bob, I got a fun train, and there's a Lickman. You better have to get down there and lick that, because they're going to be down there until 4 o'clock this afternoon as they lick it up and they run in and spit it out and put their pants on backwards. Off to Boyd. Sky Baby Sleepy.
Shut it off.
Goo goo gaga.
That's right. That's right. What are you going to do about it?
Goo goo gaga.
No!
Yeah!
Boy, Sky Baby Sweet Hand. I'm sorry.
Bear Steckler hams. Boy, they are delicious. When you slice them up and put them between two pieces of bread, you can't beat it. There's nothing you can do in this world to make it even better than that. That's right. Bear Steckler ham has been in the Bear Steckler family ever since Billy Bear and Tammy Steckler got married. Before that, it was Billy Bear ham and Tammy Steckler something. I don't know what they were into. It was a meat product, but you don't want to know. Bear Steckler hams, since 1921, the South's favorite. And now, everyone in America is enjoying the great Bear Steckler taste. All you have to do is stick your face into a ham and know that they're quality, their assurance. Yes, even their word is good. It's gold. When they say to you, it's going to taste good. Now, if it doesn't, remember at least they meant well. Bear Steckler Hams, available now at Golby's Department Store and at Whittleby's Hardware. Bear Steckler Hams, they'll sell them anywhere.
Anywhere. That's some real groovy stuff. What the hell is that? Is that
kind of psychedelic?
That is between the buried and my ass. I don't know. Anyway,
the buried and your ass,
buried up your ass.
Dr. Arthur Barn is going to be with us.
Oh, we have actually William Brown. Dr. Arthur Barn's Barn is a
Dr. Arthur Barn.
Dr. Arthur Barn. Is a vampire hunter, but Dr. Brown is, of course, with the Tupelo Institute there in Mississippi, and we're going to be talking with him right now. He's at a couple of these fundraiser they do on occasion for the Institute. Dr. Barn, it's good to talk with you. It's General Shaw.
Yes.
Understand you're working hard.
Yes, I'm working hard, and we'll continue to work hard as long as there is an animal in need. That's what it's about. But it's been a long time, General, and Mr. Hendry.
Dr. Barn, good to talk with you.
Hello, Dr. Barn.
Hello, everyone. By the way, my name is William Brown, so you butchered that, didn't you?
Dr. Brown.
I apologize. I thought you were Arthur Barn.
My name is Dr. William Brown, all right? I've worked...
All right, now, Doc, don't lose your temper, because we've had people doing that.
All right, but I have worked my ass off.
This is what he does.
Who is he?
It's you, Dr. Brown, Dr. William Brown. You use a lot of vulgarities. You get very frustrated.
I know. What I'm trying to say is that I've taken time out of my day to talk to your people.
You say you people, that's very racist.
What do you mean it's racist? It's not... I don't even see a color when I'm talking to you, Dickman. I see something that doesn't have any real human form. But my entire point and...
All right, Dr. Brown, sir... Let's just keep it on subject, and we're talking about the capuchin monkey, right, General?
Yeah, the capuchin monkey. Now, Dr. Brown, this is very interesting. There were a number of years ago, I had a friend of mine who had a capuchin monkey, and when I'd come into his yard, I noticed it had a look on its face. It would look at me like I didn't matter. Do you know what I mean?
Well, this is very common, and one of the things, I'm glad you brought that up, General. As you know, I've been working with animals my entire life. I have been working with animals since the very early days when I was a kennel boy for Dr. Bob Coppin, who was a veterinarian where I grew up in the south side of Weehawken, New Jersey. And I would take care of the animals, and it was a wonderful, wonderful time for me. But as things grew more, strained, as the finances got to be a little tight, I said to Dr. Jobin that I had to leave. And the capuchin monkeys that he had at that time, that he was taking care of for the zoo, in unison let up a racket that almost sounded like laughter. And at the time, I knew it wasn't. It was a racket having to do with the fact that their cages were filthy, and it didn't have anything to do with me, but I took it personally. And from that point forward, but when I looked at them, they all looked at me the same way that monkey looked at you, like I was so stupid. And it was the beginning of my lifelong hatred of animals, Even though
you work with them.
Even though I work with them, yes.
All right, Dr. Brown, Margaret Gray here. That is something that I don't think any of our listeners are grasping readily. You hate the guts out of animals, and yet you've spent your life working with them.
And the reason for that, though, Margaret, is the capuchin monkey.
Well, that was what I was going to say. When I looked at the kisser on this monkey this morning, and I was looking at it... Here in the office.
Oh, you say the kisser on this monkey. You're not talking about Dickman or Mr. Hendry.
No. I'm talking about the monkey in the paper.
All right.
What do you mean, Dickman or Mr. Hendry?
Just as what I said. Because we often refer to each other when we're frustrated as that monkey. I can tell you that I have worked for 25 years for the esteemed Dr. Gerald Tyrone. And he has run our institute, the Tupelo Institute. And he's run it very well. And yet, I can tell you, I've worked for that monkey for...
So that's how you feel about him.
That's pretty much it. Pretty much it.
Well, is it a lack of respect?
No, it's not a lack of respect, but he's just... That monkey causes me more problems.
And it's not racial.
No, it's not racial. He's a white man. He's whiter than... You haven't ever seen anyone as white as him. Now, but getting back to the capuchin monkey, that's what I meant about that.
All right, let me find out here what you guys are talking. You're talking about the capuchin monkey, which is a monkey that they've been studying for quite some time. And they now come to realize that it began colonizing Brazil 700 years ago with stone anvils. So this is a monkey that uses a tool.
It's a monkey that uses a tool. It's not unusual. Many monkeys, many classes and grades of ape, the lower graded apes, all the way up to the high level ape, the gorilla, the chimpanzee, as we've come to know them.
Is there a difference, by the way, between the chimpanzee and the chimpanzee?
Yes, the chimpanzee is a higher intelligence level. Excuse me, I take that back. The chimpanzee is the dumber. The chimpanzee is the higher. The chimpanzee is a more lower intelligent, low level, low principled.
See, when you talk about principles, though.
Well, look, you've got an ape here that's using an anvil, so what do you want from me?
All right, well, we're having a conversation here now about dumb animals having some kind of an attitude problem, though.
I wouldn't call it an attitude problem. Look, I hate animals. I can't stand them, and yet I work my ass off. And I'm tired.
You know, you have to control your temper, though, Dr. Brown.
I'm trying.
Dr. Brown, this is Robert Leonard. I want to ask a question. Let's get to the nut cutting of it, as the general likes to say. When you're talking about the capuchin monkey...
Yes.
Now, how is this monkey giving the eyeball... And you think it's giving you the stink eye, right, General?
Well, I wouldn't call it the stink eye. It's giving me the eyeball.
What are you talking about? Like the evil eye?
I said no, it's not the evil eye.
What are you talking about?
Yes, what are you talking about?
What am I talking... I'm saying that when I walk into the room at this friend of mine's house and he's got this capuchin monkey and it sits there staring at me like it thinks it's all this if...
Well, all right, so you've got a personal thing with this one ape.
No, I don't think it's personal. I think it's the entire species.
All right, two things. It is possible, and I've worked with capuchin monkeys, it is possible for them to have an individual hang-up with a human being. They've got a problem, and when I walked in to the laboratory the first morning that we got our first shipment of capuchins, and we were going to study them, and then eventually, of course, we were going to integrate them into the ape population, because I love working with animals in terms of the how they will interact with other species. Even though I hate their living guts, I do like doing that.
You know, I got to interrupt you. There's people that are listening for the first time.
You're going to ask me, how do I hate animals? I can't go through this again, Phil.
Well, there's people listening for the first time and want to know what that means.
Well, he just said, Phil, when he was a young kennel boy working for one of the veterinarians, the ape gave him the eyeball.
Yes, I told you. It was the capuchin monkey that set me off on my course of utter hatred for animals, even as I want them to survive and flourish.
Okay, so the monkey we're talking about.
Yes, the monkey we're talking about right now.
And we're not talking about you. Oh. All right. Okay, I took the shot. I heard your show yesterday morning.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, listen. I mean, listen.
You can't say the full word, listen.
Listen.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, see, this is what I've been listening to Dickman and studying him. There's not much difference between Dickman and the capuchin monkey. Now, with the stone anvil...
Now, let me just back up for a moment here. You said that it's not unusual for monkeys to use stone for monkeys to use objects.
No, not at all. Not, there are many species. The capuchin monkey thinks it's something special... Because it does, and because it colonized the rainforest. There's a lot of things that the capuchin monkey do that it seems to think it's, excuse the language, but there's no other way of saying it. The capuchin monkey doesn't think it shit stinks because...
Oh, please, doctor.
I'm sorry, but the capuchin monkey doesn't think it shit stinks. Because it can use a stone anvil, because it colonizes, and because it sits there in its cage staring me down. Like I'm something that dropped out of its rear end. And I won't have it, I tell you.
And that's why you essentially don't like animals.
I would say that figures into it, yes.
All right, now what, General, did you have a question?
Well, the only question I'd have, Dr. Brown, is what is the upshot? What will be the end result of your studies?
Well, we're trying to find out where the capuchin monkey migrated from, and what is the outside, if you will, what is the extreme of its ability? What can we expect from the capuchin monkey over the next several hundred years if we as a species, as humans, are going to interact with and inhabit the same planet with the capuchin monkey? We've got to know what every animal on this planet is capable of. What can we expect from them? Are they going to pull their own weight? Are they going to pull their load? Are they going to sit there on their dead you know what, and expect humans to do all the work, like all these other monkeys and apes? Gee, you know, you've got zebras, all of them sit there staring at us and waiting, okay, where's our food? And this is why I resent, God, I resent it.
All right, well, Dr. Brown, we don't want to keep you. I know that you're very, very busy.
Well, the seminar's about to wrap up, but I would like to introduce you here to Jim Keating. Jim, come on over here. Jim, you've worked with a capuchin monkey.
Who is this?
This is Jim Keating. He's one of my lab assistants. Jim, you've worked with a capuchin monkey.
Yeah, I have.
Tell me, what can you, in your mind, because you know I hate their living guts.
Well, you do because they stare at you.
Yeah, they do stare at me. Do they stare at you?
Yeah, they stare at me.
Well, that's no surprise because Jim is one of my most loyal assistants, but he is a redneck. He's a little bit of a rube, and the monkeys, as soon as they saw him, the thought crossed. You can see the thought crossing their eyes. Why am I in the cage and he's out there? Is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty much, yeah.
All right, Jim, so what do we expect from them?
Well, I think the capuchin monkey is it's frugal. It saves its money. It rides a motorbike.
That's all we need. Get out of here. That's Jim Keating, one of my lab assistants.
That was Jim Keating, one of your... he said that the thing rides a motorbike and it's frugal.
Yes, that's what he said. Do you doubt him?
Well, what does that mean? It means the ape is able to save money and ride motorbikes.
He saw one ride a motorbike. What do you want from me?
Honda 50.
Honda 50.
Which they don't make anymore.
Well, so what? Probably bought one off another ape. How do I know?
All right, thank you very much, Dr. Brown.
But William, we'll talk to you later, huh?
All right, that's fine. I've still got 20 minutes to learn. I got a tuna sandwich in 20 minutes. That's it?
Yeah, I think we've got all the information we need. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah.
Dr. William Brown, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. We'll be right back. By the way, if you see any capuchin apes out there riding motorbikes, Jesus. Hi, everybody. Bob Coxley. That's something, isn't it, huh? The capuchin monkey. Well, listen, you know, we have a show every afternoon on Channel 61, and it's about tricks that pets do, tricks that mankies do. That's right, I said mankey. Not monkey, mankies. Mankies are a higher elevation of the monkey. It's football played by monkeys. It's called Ape Go Long.
What are you crying for?
I'm not. I'm laughing. It's called Ape Go Long, and we'd like you to join us for that. Bob Coxley, afternoons, 4 o'clock for Ape Go Long, and that's the new Ape Football League.
The AFL on Channel 61.
Ape Go Long.
Oh my God, Phil!
Yeah, that's Metallica. This is from the Ronnie, Ronnie James Dio, This Is Your Life album.
Yeah, this bitch is called Ronnie Rising.
Yeah, you mean Ronnie Rising. I got you rising. All right. Welcome back here. Eliza Schlesinger she's a great comic, and she's got a podcast called Truth and Eliza, and I'm going to be on it. Today, now you won't be able to hear it today. I don't know when it's going to be dropping, but I'll be going down to the Hollywood Improv later on.
Well, so they're recording that at the Hollywood Improv podcast studio.
Where is that? At the Hollywood Improv.
The Hollywood Improv.
I mean, where? Don't get smart with me. A minute. I mean, where at the Hollywood Improv? It's upstairs in their podcast studio. So,
what's this young lady's name?
Eliza Schlesinger. And
well, you say that like you're not sure.
Every time I say a person's name for the first time, I want to make sure I get it right, even though I'm very familiar with Eliza Schlesinger. Okay, Eliza Schlesinger, and it's called Truth and Eliza. So we're going to be there. When it drops, we'll let you know. It ought to be a whole lot of fun. Well, by the way, today I was talking with some folks, finding a little bit more about finding a little bit more out about Pokemon Go.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I found out some things, too.
What did you find out?
Yeah, General, go ahead.
Well, this game, I'm going to tell you, I'll kill somebody if I find out what they do.
God, General, you got to figure out people having fun.
What kind of people have fun?
They can have all the fun they want, but what I found out, Phil, is it's like a GPS game.
Right.
And you see where there's a play area, you know, which right there gives me the creeps. So some slob is looking at this on his phone. he sees on this GPS there's a play area, so he goes over to the play area, right? Well, guess what? The play area, one of these play area was in the Holocaust Museum.
Oh, my God.
Yes, that's right. I'll tell you, I would have, oh, man. If I'd been around and some jackball comes in saying, hi, I'm here to play Pokemon or whatever, I'd kick him in the balls.
Now, General.
No, wait. I'd kick them directly in the nuts, wait for the screaming to stop, and then push them out into traffic just ahead of a van going about 60. I'm General Galen.
General, that's very violent.
Well, I can't take that kind of thing.
All right, now, we don't know that has, although that was the origin of, we were trying to tell the story yesterday about these dudes that got mugged.
Well, yeah, so obviously they were going to a play area.
Yeah, there was some play area that they saw on the GPS. And you can see these areas. They'll be on your phone, and it's like a little map, and you see where you are, and then you turn yourself in the direction of wherever this thing is, and then you head there. Now, I guess you can physically go there, or you can go there in terms of virtual reality. I'm not sure. But some people going there physically were physically assaulted.
Into these play areas?
Yeah, because they're looking on the GPS.
Well, that was my understanding. Now, if I went to a play area, not that I'd lower myself, but if I decided that I wanted to play Pokemon...
Yeah, but why would you want to do it?
Why would I want to... I don't know. Let's say... Get out of here.
Shut up, bud.
I'm doing it just because I'm doing it, because I want to piss you off. So...
Wouldn't piss me off.
Wouldn't piss you off? When did you become Spanish?
Yeah.
Anyway, so you go there... If I went there and some numbnut was there waiting to mug me, that'd be the last time he ever played Pokemon or any other...
All right, well, obviously, General, you have a decidedly negative view of this thing, and I kind of got the same thing, too, when I was actually talking to Keith and a couple of guys over at the studio today about that. Vernon Dozier is joining us from Belmar Academy. Mr. Dozier, as you know, is a high school football coach there, a varsity coach, and as well is a social studies and history teacher. And Coach Dozier, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Hello, Vernon.
Yeah, good morning, everybody.
Coach, are you getting familiar with this Pokemon?
Yeah, I'm getting familiar with it, and as you might expect, and as General Shaw is probably thinking right now, I don't have any better experience with it than General Shaw. I got better things to do with my life than to see some, you know, if you'll forgive me for saying it, some four-eye come running in to my classroom and going, "Wee," or something, because what they do, as you said, there's a play area.
But what do you mean, "Wee"?
What I mean is, I'll be in the middle of class, and the Pokemon play area may be my classroom. Maybe some of these jokers have decided, hey, why don't we make Coach Dozier's class an area where we're going to meet and pull our pants down or whatever they're going to do.
Have they done that?
Yes. Are they doing anything crude like that?
No, not in my classroom. They wouldn't dare do that, because I can tell you, the way the general responded to it, I would.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, but so... what they'll do is, we were in the middle of class just yesterday, as a matter of fact, and two guys come running in, two four-eyes come running in going, woo, like that. And I said, what in the hell are you doing? They said, we're here. This is a play area. Woo. And they're popping around and jumping around like they're on some kind of a mixture of chemicals. I don't know what. And a lot of times you get these hopheads. So I don't know what I'm dealing with. They were two freshmen, not freshmen, they were two juniors. I recognized both of them from the water polo team, and they came running in, going, "Ee, you know, we're playing Pokemon."
What were they doing?
Well, they were just—it's hard to say. A couple of four-eyed dorks come running in, and they're going, "Hey, it's Pokemon!" Yeah, their tongues are hanging out and all this. So I grabbed them both by their collars, and I did something that you've probably only seen in cartoons. I did it for real. I smacked their heads together.
Oh, but you know, you can really injure someone that way.
Now, that's pretty rough.
Well, it may be rough, but it brought them out of it. All of a sudden, they were like, "Coach Dozier, you know, we're sorry." I said, "Well, what the hell are you doing?" And they said, "We were hopping around like a bunch of four-eyed dorks doing Pokemon and waiting for someone to come in here and pull their pants down or something. I don't know."
That doesn't sound like they're playing the game right.
Yeah, there's a certain rules to the game.
Oh, well, I don't know, and I have no interest in whether they're playing the game right or not. They might have been playing the game absolutely perfect as far as the game was concerned, and it still wouldn't be acceptable to me. We have a problem in our society, Phil, and we have it in our schools. We're losing control of the structure of any given day, if we have a class or we have a school or we have a normal course of events that is being interrupted by the external world of games. Now, understand, this is a interesting phenomenon where you have a GPS game that has taken over people's minds. I heard, and Bud, you told me about this, about the car on the freeway.
Yeah, guy stopped his car in the middle of the freeway.
Why?
Because he said, oh, wow, I'm in the middle of a play area. Next thing you know, he goes, wow, I'm right here, and he stops his car.
He stopped because he thought it was a play area.
Yeah, this guy thought that this area that he had just come upon was on a freeway. I don't know, maybe some ass put it there on purpose to screw this guy up, but he stopped his car, got rear-ended, and there was like a 25-30 car pileup. People could have died, but you've got cars smashing into each other, almost like those pileups in the Thule fog, and you've got cars hitting other cars, cars cartwheeling over top of other cars, screaming, people being, the cars on fire, and the screams can be heard for miles.
Oh, get out of here.
Well, you know what? You can well imagine. So,
So what about your classroom?
The same thing with my classroom, you know, and we're losing control over the structure of the day. So I'm in the middle of a class, and two of these dorks come running in going, yee, you know.
Now, what are they really doing that?
For all intents and purposes, I'm not going to go into what they were saying. I don't remember. It all came out to this. They come running in with the four eyes and the buck teeth, and they're going, yee. That's what it sounded like to me.
What do you mean buck teeth? Now, all of a sudden, they've got buck teeth.
Yeah, look. I'm telling you, when these guys come running in playing their Pokemon Fun Zone, they all of a sudden look to you like they're four-eyed, buck-toothed, big-eared geeks with freckles on their noses and a big zit on their chin. Actually, a zit on the nose and a freckle on the chin. Well, no, there's freckles on the nose and a zit on the nose, and there's a weak chin. That's what I wanted to say.
But hold on for a minute. All right, so you are categorizing these guys as nerds.
No, he's saying that's exactly what he's seeing.
That's exactly what I'm seeing. The Pokemon game causes the person viewing the individual playing, it's almost like a hallucination. These guys came running, and when I saw them later, they're members of the water polo team. Both these guys are very good looking. They both look like Christopher Reeves, you know, or that, who's the guy that everybody thinks is so damn, that Hemsworth. That's what they look like.
Wait, and you're saying when you saw them...
When I saw them, they had glasses, a zit on their nose, going, yee! And, fuck.
The language, please.
I'm sorry, but you're asking me a question.
All right, so you hallucinated something.
I don't know what I hallucinated. Did they, in real life, look like Christopher Reeve? Or do they, in real life, look like they got a zit on their nose with four eyes and a buck teeth? I don't know.
Do you know these kids?
I know them from the water polo team, but I don't remember what they look like. But I do know there's two different sets of faces that they have.
And all right, this is getting really weird.
No, what are you talking about, Matt? Are you hallucinating?
Hey, Robert, with all due respect, don't call me man, okay? I'm a teacher.
What are you hallucinating?
I'm not this is the game that's doing it.
Well, you know, Coach, I agree with you that this Pokemon is a real nutball deal. But you're trying to tell me now that when you saw these kids come running into your classroom, they had the four eyes with the buck teeth.
Yeah, their fly was open, and I remember a big zit on the nose of one of these guys, and he had oily, greasy hair with dandruff, and he's going, woo! And later, when they didn't have their Pokemon game, and they were just walking across the quad, and I go, one of the guys' name is de Blasio. I said, is that you, de Blasio? He said, yeah, Coach, and he turned around, and he looked just like Brad Pitt or something. So,
well, it sounds to me like you're seeing things.
No, I'm not seeing things. It's what the game does.
The game makes you see them as dorks.
I think they turn into dorks. That's my philosophy. That's my feeling.
Well, you know, that might be a point because an awful lot of people are weighing into the negative here, Phil.
Look, I don't care how good a game or how bad a game, how negative an influence, no game is going to change the face of a guy so he looks like a four-eyed dork. Man.
Yeah, well, you can laugh if you want, Phil.
All right, Coach. How is the school handling this?
Well, the school is basically saying no more Pokemon here. We are not turning anything into any kind of a play area. You keep your Pokemon at home, or we'll take it home for you, and we'll park it right up your rear end and take you home with it. Now, you can have it any way you want. You can have it halfway. You can have it a quarter of the way. You know, you can take it three-quarters of the way down the road, or we'll go all the way down the road, which is you and the Pokemon go home with the Pokemon shoved up your ass sector. I'm sorry, but still, it's a residual hallucination.
Residual hallucination for the Pokemon?
Yeah, I'm still seeing four-eyed pimpled dorks.
All right, Coach Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. Coach, thank you. It's always something with our schools, with our kids, with our society, trying to keep our kids on the straight and narrow.
Absolutely, Phil, and it's a challenge being a teacher. I love being a teacher, but I will not have it. I won't be standing there talking about the Portuguese, you know, landing in the New World, and all of a sudden, some ass with his fly open and his thing hanging out
comes running in.
Goodbye.
Wait a minute. Nobody hangs up on this show, remember?
I heard people do it yesterday.
Well, you don't get to.
Are you crying?
Yeah.
Go ahead, hang up.
Thank you.
Coach Vernon Dozier, ladies and gentlemen, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, as we discuss the Pokemon Go craze. Whack, goofy, kooky, geeky, dorky, way, way out there, man. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Bend down around your head. Bend down around your head for niggas that's here.
Man.
Good Lord.
Lord. Lord.
Thotties in the city moving slow. 30, 35, 100 for the cold. Only real niggas keep you flow. Keep you flow.
World famous Phil Henry Show from the El Pacifico in Southern California.
Only true niggas I know.
And this is Margaret Gray. I know a lot of you are Starbucks drinkers. Will be very interested to know that Starbucks is now raising its prices on drinks because they've raised their wages, which I think is very, very good. But at the same time, when you raise the wages of your employees, it shouldn't necessarily, I think, devolve to raising prices. And so I wanted to talk about that, and Phil's giving me the opportunity to discuss that today with my husband, Frank Gray, who is an attorney and has done quite a bit of work, just not only work, you know, with corporations and so forth. He's done a lot of labor work. And, of course, this election, Frank, one of the big, big stories is the minimum wage.
Well, that's exactly right. And hello, everybody.
Hi, Frank.
Hello, Frank.
Hi, and hello, Margaret.
Yes, hello, Frank.
That's exactly right. The minimum wage is a major part of the election campaign. I know that Donald Trump has talked about it, and Hillary Clinton has talked about it, although he's talking about it in a different way. He's a Democrat, and so he's definitely wanting to raise the minimum wage to $15. She is not in favor of raising the minimum wage.
Are you all right, dear?
I'm all right. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. When that happens, I have a difficult time moving my mouth. So he did not raise. He is not going to raise it if he's elected. He will raise it if he's elected. She won't.
Now, who's going to raise it?
He will. That's
Hillary Clinton.
That's correct, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. She's not going to raise it.
Oh, okay.
I think that is all well and good. We're talking about Starbucks. Now, this is a place where a lot of people go to get their coffee. I don't know about anybody else, but I got to have what I got to have, and I got to have coffee. And Margaret knows. I mean, my wife makes coffee for me in the morning. He can't make it strong enough, and I always tell him. I say, honey, one of the reasons why I love watching Margaret make coffee is he stands there, and I'm looking at his butt. Well,
Frank, would you please?
Well, is it wrong for a husband to admire his wife's beautiful rear end? He's got one of the best-looking rear ends I've ever seen. He's made me very happy. He's a beautiful woman.
Frank, I appreciate that very much, but that's not what this is about.
Well, what I'm saying is, haven't I told you that one of the joys of watching you make coffee for me in the morning is to see your rear end staring at me almost as if it has a face of its own?
Yes, you've talked that way before.
All right. Now, I don't know that I want to give up the joy of that to go to Starbucks and drink whatever they think is coffee. You know, Starbucks says they're selling you coffee. I wouldn't know if it was coffee or if it was something that they drained out of a roofing tar bucket. I don't know what it is. But Starbucks is going to charge me more for the battery acid that they sell. And I could stay at home and get a heaping hot cup of coffee, a mess of flapjacks. Sorry. A mess of flapjacks, bacon, a cheese sandwich, I don't know, whatever the hell it is, that my wife will make for me. And he makes it with love. And then he sits in my lap and I eat it, and I can feel his beautiful, okay, I'll say it, ass, sitting right there on my thigh as I eat my breakfast.
All right, Frank, that's all well and good. What's that got to do with Starbucks raising prices?
It's got to do with Starbucks raising prices because I won't go to Starbucks to drink their battery acid, like I was saying.
Yeah, you're saying it's not worth it.
It's not worth it. No, Starbucks isn't worth it. I'm glad they're giving their employees a raise. Chick Willington, who is a law partner of mine, his daughter works there. And I was asking Chick, I said, how much money is your daughter making? And she said he's not making a lot of money at all. You know, she's, look, Chick is an attorney, one of my dear friends. She's obviously making a nice wage. She's got a wife and a daughter, but her daughter makes nothing at Starbucks. She was telling me that he only makes a few bucks an hour. So I said, well, what about raising that minimum wage? And she said, basically, I could give a damn what happens. I don't pay that much attention to what my kid makes. So that was a boring conversation to have. But I, one of the things that is very, very important to me is that the minimum wage be raised for the people at Starbucks, or I stay home and watch my wife's, okay, I'll say it again, my wife's rear end while he makes me coffee.
Okay, Frank, thank you.
Phil was trying not to laugh.
What are you laughing at?
No, I... Thanks a lot, Margaret.
Well?
I want to be told if anyone's laughing at me. You were?
I was laughing at something else. I was laughing at a commercial.
I'll find out later tonight if you're lying. If she's lying, I want you to tell me, Margaret.
I will.
All right. This is Frank Gray reporting.
Oh, don't look at me, Phil.
Oh, well, what's the point?
Margaret, what are you doing? What are you doing that for?
Well, what are you laughing at?
Because he's funny when he's saying she, he, she. Everyone knows it's funny. All right, world famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. It's been our pleasure to be a part of your morning, your day, your thing, whatever the hell you call it. And
I call it my day. I don't call it my thing.
Right. We'll see you guys tomorrow. And we're heading out to the Hollywood Improv Lab, the Hollywood Improv Podcast Studio, to be with Eliza Schlesinger and Truth and Eliza on her podcast today. And we'll let you know when that drops, okay?
World famous Phil Henry Show.
I want to do it. It's my turn.
Oh, well, go ahead.
World famous Phil Henry Show is executive produced by Phil Henry for Siempre Incorporated. All rights reserved on Podcast One.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, it's my turn. My turn.